This is Panel by Panel, a show designed specifically to help you make sense of the decades of continuity surrounding your favorite comics events. Hosted by Uncle George Doro, who picked up his first comic book from the spinning rack at a corner convenience store, and Epic Boss McFall, who gets his comics online and binges via graphic novel and trade paperback. This week, it's part two of the epic Marvel Comics event, Civil War. And we gotta warn you, from this point forward, it gets all kinds of spoilery up in here.
Hey, and welcome to the spoiler episode of Civil War. This is Panel by Panel. We take story arcs from beginning to end. We're not worried about what's going on right now in the newest episode. We want to know how this story started, how it made its run, and how it ended, and how it's going to affect the comic universe going forward. We do focus on the Marvel Universe currently because Marvel Unlimited is a very, very easy way to read books, but that does not exclude that we're going to go to DC or Image or anybody else later on as they become easily available. I am Charles McFall. With me, as always, is Uncle George Doro. How are you doing, George?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I'm very excited to get back into. Now we get to do spoilers. Now we get to no more holding back. We get to talk about it. But I know you've got a great list of things you wanted to bring out, so I'm going to let you lead this charge.
We're covering Civil War, not Secret Wars. That'll be coming up sometime in the future.
Yeah.
So the storyline is basically what happens in the Marvel Universe when the actions of superheroes cause huge civilian casualties and the public doesn't stand for it anymore. So you got the two sides of superheroes, one that thinks the Government Registration Act is a good thing and are willing to comply, and the other that consider it an infringement on their civil rights and decide to oppose the act and not comply. So, of course, the major conflicts ensue between the two sides, both verbal and with fists and powers.
Do you want to tackle? Let's tackle the episode or issue by issue and just go through the what we remember of the details.
Yeah, so, at first, Tony Stark wasn't on board with the Registration Act, as we pointed out in the previous episode, but he decided to face facts and know that it was coming down whether he was on the side of it or not. So he thought it behooved the superheroes to go along with it rather than oppose it, because if they opposed it, things could end up worse. If they complied, then at least they could work on gradual change from within.
I think part of it, too, because the way this is written, and it's very real-world, government-based, how society would react. So going back to the tragedy, we talked about the New Mutants. It's not New Mutants. It's
New Warriors.
New Warriors, thank you. The New Warriors had their reality TV show. They rushed into a situation and had a big fight. Nitro ended up getting knocked over from the house he was in, basically a block away or so, to a school. This is set in Stamford, Connecticut, and he was landed outside of a elementary school, and then he blew himself up, which normally wouldn't have been that big of a deal, except it was almost this nuclear sized bomb. And then one of the biggest things that they covered was he had never done anything like that. And as we progress through the spoilers, we'll get into more and more of how they dealt with that. But I think going back to Tony and why he chose to become the face of it, not just is it not going to be inevitable. I mean, it's definitely inevitable, but I think it's because it was children, and because it was such a tragic thing that part of the politician that's in him, part of the crafty businessman that's in Tony went, you can't fight children. You can't fight dead children. You know, you can't say, well, here's some logic. I mean, when there's dead children involved, logic goes out the window. So I think part of it was of why he changed his mind was that was now it's the fates are sealed and right. We have to do this. So he might as well be the one to control it. That's his answer to everything, right? Well, if we're going to do it, I might as well be the guy to control it.
Yeah. That is Tony Stark's modus operandi. So yeah, that fit in perfectly with his persona.
Yeah. So he definitely takes a charge. We talked about the amazing scene right before midnight of it passing. They do the very much the, I guess, TV episode version of things where you see in that particular book, you see everybody kind of prepping for it. Luke Cage making his decision, sending Jessica Jones and their baby away for a while because he knows he's going to resist. Captain America out and out saying this is wrong and walking away and essentially starting scrambling to put together his support team at first, you know, just people to help support him, which then end up turning into an army later. Do you remember anybody else but in particular you see prepping for this? Spider-Man, maybe, kind of trying to figure out what he's going to do? I don't remember.
Yeah, it just touched on, you know, each character got a panel or two to spotlight what their view was.
Now, what I did find interesting leading into this, they set up Peter Parker as an intern with Tony Stark.
Right. This is something that came out of the new Avengers, where Spider-Man finally was a member of the Avengers, and everything was going along pretty swimmingly. Tony had taken Peter Parker and Mary Jane and Peter's Aunt May under his wing and let them live in Stark Tower. Kind of was a mentor to Peter as far as how to behave in the real world, not just going out there in costume and beating up on Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, and I am not a fan of normal Peter Parker Spider-Man stories because they always make him kind of this character that I don't relate to. Is this sometimes he's whiny, sometimes he's just immature, he's always running his mouth. I don't know, it's just not the hero that I relate to typically, but this Spider-Man and Peter Parker, he's married at this point to Mary Jane, and he's a grown up. He's not some little snot-nosed high schooler, and he's facing real world decisions, and he still is influenced by his mentor, Tony Stark. And he's already starting to see little things go, make him want to ask questions, and he's not afraid to ask questions, but he doesn't push it too far at first. So I liked Spider-Man. The Spider-Man character in Civil War was very much that catalyst for the reader, I felt, to start planting seeds in your brain so you would have a hard time picking sides. Mm-hmm. You know, so you would be carried along in the story.
Yeah, they did a good job of putting Peter Parker's ambivalence on display. He believed that what Tony was doing was the right thing, but then Tony keeps secrets from him, and then when Peter realizes that, that makes him kind of wonder if he's doing the right thing. And eventually, Tony Stark convinces Peter Parker to, and here comes the first spoiler, to publicly unmask, not just to the government as the Registration Act requires, but to go on to a televised press conference and remove his mask and reveal his identity to the at large.
To literally unmask.
Yes.
And that way that was set up was very manipulated by Tony. And so I'm going to go ahead and jump to my big spoiler. If they play Tony Stark in the movie anything like they wrote him in this book, which is you just really start to see he is not a good guy. In fact, he's almost borderline evil. I mean, he's just a nasty piece of work when it comes down to it. He's so damaged. He's so afraid of losing control that he manipulates everybody. It becomes this real dark thing that we'll talk about. Because I want to talk about some stuff you have written about Spider-Man before I get into the later parts with him and Spider-Man. But that's the first thing you see. I mean, he just manipulates this to where he convinces Peter to publicly be the face of unmasking. Mm-hmm. And he takes his mask off in like the second book, I think it is.
Yeah. But well, I disagree with the assessment that that Tony Stark is evil, because throughout it, I believe that Tony Stark's heart is in the right place. He wants to do what's right for his community, which is the superpowered heroes. And he also wants to do right by the public. But because of who he is, he's a very successful industrialist and businessman. He has the kind of the Donald Trump attitude where everything has to be under his control. If he thinks he's right about something, he has to convince everybody else that he's right about that.
Yeah.
And it's not so much evil as egotistical.
Yeah, I guess it's because he holds the belief that he's right, or he holds the belief that what he's doing is for the greater good. I mean, I honestly immediately sided with Captain America under the idea of you have to back off and let people choose. And while there can be regulations and this and that and the other, this whole I'm right and I'm going to force everybody into this mentality really just struck me wrong. And there's things he does later that even, you know, I was very much, this is the first time ever, it surprised the crap out of me, but I was very much identifying with the Peter Parker character as I'm reading through the story, having the same doubts he's having, going, wait a minute, this isn't, you know, I love Tony Stark. I love Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. But if they do this movie as well as they're going to do this movie, it's going to change the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, yeah. It has the potential to be a really dark, deep.
Yeah. Yeah. But you didn't like how they handled the unmasking.
It's not so – well, yeah, there were aspects of it that were problematic to me because – as they pointed out in the story, nobody has more closely guarded their secret identity in the MU than Peter Parker. Because he knows that, especially with his rogues gallery, if they know that he has an aunt that he adores, if they know that he has a wife and possibly a kid at some time in the future, that Spider-Man is not going to be the target. It's his loved ones that are going to be the target, and he will do everything he can to protect them. So, and I know that they did issues where he at length discussed this with
May
and with Mary Jane, and they supported his decision to unmask, and that...
of course. Wait, with that caveat, though, the caveat was... at the time, they were living in Stark Tower and had all the security and governances of Tony Stark.
Yes. So they felt pretty secure at that point. First time I read through, I just never understood why it was why Spider-Man was publicly unmasked, why he didn't just reveal himself to the government. So I finally read one part, either in the main storyline or in one of the peripheral books, that explained that Tony Stark convinced him that because he had the most closely guarded secret identity, putting him out there in the public would win hearts and minds of the public toward what he was trying to achieve with his support of the Registration Act. And I said, okay, I could kind of see that, but still, this is Peter Parker. It was a major shocker. I thought, wow, that was a bold move on Marvel's part. And I thought, okay, I'm really interested in seeing where they go with this. And
they kind of didn't.
Yeah, and predictably, what happened in Spider-Man's story is that, yeah, his villains are starting to go after his family because later on in the series, he's no longer on Tony Stark's side.
Right.
And so that means they no longer afforded the protection of Stark Tower. So they are on the run and in hiding, and they're frequently under attack by Spider-Man's enemies. Now, here's where the biggest problem was, is that by doing this, Marvel really painted themselves into a corner because this could be the adventures of Spider-Man for years to come. A villain tries to attack his family. He tries to protect them. He fights the villain, defeats him. Here comes another villain, tries to do the same thing.
Right.
And it could just be this vicious, vicious circle. And so I thought, okay, they need to kind of resolve this in one way or another. And the way they did was to just pull this deus ex machina where the storyline, One More Day, I think it was, Mephisto just... And what Mephisto got out of it, I don't understand, but he gives Peter back his life before his marriage to Mary Jane.
Right.
And brings Aunt May back to life, who had been shot. But Peter has to give up his married life and all the things that had happened since he got married. And it's just pretty convoluted way to solve this problem that they painted themselves into.
Yeah, it the other parts of it, they didn't quite make sense to me. Okay, I get the mentorship from Tony to Peter. He builds him a whole new spider suit, which, like any person, would want to run out and start testing, and it's more powerful, it's better. But even in the best of circumstances, people don't trust Tony Stark, right? We've seen that in the Avengers movies. We've seen that in pretty much every book ever written with Tony Stark. It's like, wait a minute, but what else is going on here? But Peter didn't ask that question, right?
Right.
So later on, he and Tony start fighting, and only by a fluke of incidences does Peter get away momentarily. But another thing, I'll get into it in a minute, but another thing that backs me up about Tony's decisions that really, I mean, it just makes me see him as a whole different person. That tore him apart. Well, he ends up returning to his regular costume. And then him and Tony go head to head in one of the final books. It was maybe 6. I don't think it was 7, but I think it was in 6. And Peter's freaking out because his spider sense is going crazy. He's basically seeing ghosts of Tony around, because the whole damn time Tony's monitoring his biometrics wearing the suit, and he's capturing how his spider sense works. He's freaking, in a horrible way, he's freaking Batman of the Justice League. He's figuring out the weaknesses because he knows at some point everybody's going to turn on him, versus Batman, who absolutely is doing the good of everybody going, no, what if?
Yeah.
I think you're cool now, but what if? And then this, I know we're jumping over Justice League for a second, but the whole answer in the Justice League was, well, what about you? He goes, here's the folder. Here's how you beat me. You know, he already had a folder for himself. His was universally planned, whereas Tony was, again, he's not thinking this consciously, but it's almost, no, I'm God and you have to, I control everything. You know, and Peter didn't pick up on that. So Peter got royally screwed, and then that story just kind of disappeared. It's like, well, wait a minute. Y'all go head to head here. You bring out that he studied your stuff. He figured out how to beat your spider sense, how to mess with your head, and developed essentially pseudo spider senses of his own, so Spider-Man couldn't even hit him. And that went on for a few panels, and then there was no resolution. It was just they kind of started fighting other people instead or something. It was, I don't know. I remember going, where's the wrap up on this? I mean, that's a huge thing. You just took away not only Spider-Man's identity, but essentially his superpower, at least against Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, that was a rough moment for me, because it didn't end up making sense in the end. I mean, it made perfect sense of why he did it, but they didn't carry it out, I don't think.
Yeah, and that whole scene where he and Iron Man battle it out resulted from one of the main battles, I believe it was in issue 4.
It was Cap and he and Cap came together, much like Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev, many, many times before a final battle, mm-hmm. right? So it was an ambush. It was essentially Iron Man and Cap were supposed to meet in this ball field alone. Well, of course, Cap brought his backup. Well, S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't give a crap what Tony said. They followed him. And so they, of course, come out of nowhere and try to capture Captain America and his team. And that's where that battle ensued.
Yeah. And then they introduce, or they show that the big shocker at the end of that issue is the return of Thor.
Yeah. Who
had dead and gone for about a year in our time. And it turns out it's not the real Thor, but it's a cyborg clone that Hank Pym and Reed Richards developed. And unfortunately, there was no kill switch on him, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Because he ends up killing one of the
he kills Goliath.
Yeah, one of the anti-registration heroes, and it's at that point that Peter Parker says, "Uh-oh, I don't know if I'm on the right side anymore. This has gone way over the line."
Yeah.
So that's where Peter Parker's view on the whole thing changes.
Right.
So,
I think that's where my view changed too. I mean, when I first read this, I mean, it was a pivotal moment in the storyline, and just very much Thor. Of course, I was reading this isolated, so I didn't know Thor had been dead and gone. So when Thor appears, and then I was totally taken for a ride, just like everybody else. I'm thinking it's the real Thor, and he's not acting right, and he kills Goliath. Mm-hmm. And then it comes out that this is an abomination that they created in a lab.
Yeah,
man, there's so many wrong turns. And that's what I love about this so much, because it's so real life, right? Everything in politics, everything. When you don't give human beings just the right to choose and trust that things will work out right, it just builds up. Now, of course, this is hyped up. This is amped up.
Yeah.
But
because it is a comic book.
Yeah. And it was, and it's a story, it's a parable, if you will. I mean, it's going to be hyper, it's going to be bigger than life is what it's going to be. But, you know, as they're going along, they're like, well, let's make this thing, and it's going to be a good idea. Which led to the very next stupid thing that Tony did, which was making the Marvel version of Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Right? And recruiting all these rogues gallery bad guys, which actually were pretty much all Spider-Man bad guys, for oddly enough. Not all of them, but most of it was Spider-Man bad guys.
Yeah, well, there was Lady Deathstrike and Taskmaster, who are from other books. But
oh, God. Okay. Favorite moment in the entire series was when Taskmaster shoots Reed Richards, because he's going to go kill. He's trying to kill, because all of them are going off the rails every chance that they get. When they think their handler's not watching them, they stay true to who they are. They really just try to rain destruction and death down. And he's going to shoot like Susan Richards, and Reed sees him, who at this point, Susan and Reed are on opposite sides. We can talk about that in a second. Reed jumps in the way, and of course he's Reed Richards. Bullets just bounce off him, but they're hurt, and it knocked him out or whatever. And Susan basically heard Reed cry out. She turns around and saw what happened. And the greatest drawing in this entire book is Taskmaster's face as he sees her see him. He goes, "Oh crap!" And then she just smashes him with a force blast or something. I actually laughed out loud at that. His face made me. We need Taskmaster in the movies, dude. We need Taskmaster in the movies. I don't know who could play him as well as I read him, but we need it. We're lacking a Taskmaster. But that, you know, there's a thing with the Goblin. There's so much here that we could go off on that it just filled up two or three shows. So there's a storyline with Frontline, which was a spinoff series in the middle of this, which followed Ben Reilly and Ben Urich. Yeah, Ben Reilly. No, we don't follow the Scarlet Spider. Ben Urich and the female reporter, I can't remember her name, but you get to follow them as they are trying to cover the story, right? As they would. So there's in the way I reread it this time, I first got to see the bad guys doing their thing as quote unquote your registration warriors.
Yeah.
In Frontline, where the Goblin just about kills Ben and is just messing with him as best he can, and then Ben gets away. But ultimately when Spider-Man and Iron Man have it out, and Iron Man always the better man, right? He's always got to be the better man. So he's got Spider-Man basically beaten, and he stops and he takes his mask off. And again, he's trying to reason, because like you said, George, Tony has to have you believe what he believes for it to be right.
Right.
So he's trying to convince Spider-Man that he's right. The security guards bust in and shoot at Spider-Man. Of course he dodges, but it weakens the window that's reinforced behind Spider-Man so that Spider-Man could escape, which was a great twist.
Yeah.
And like any good hero does, he goes into the sewer to hide, and then he runs into the Goblin, or no,
Jack-O-Lantern.
Jack-O-Lantern, yeah. And who else?
And the Jester.
And the Jester.
Yeah. And Marvel's poor man version of the Joker.
Not anymore, because he's Marvel's dead man version of the Joker. Because thank God my boy came out of nowhere, because Spider-Man was toast. I mean, he was DRT, which is what we used to say in the paramedic field, which is dead right there. and Punisher came out and killed the two of them. I'm like, how do you kill the jack-o'-lantern? I mean, he's like kind of an iconic bad guy in this whole thing. And dude, the way they drew that too was very interesting. The violence in this really kind of threw me off a lot because mm-hmm. I didn't expect it to be so permanently violent in so many ways and so many times, which is great. I'm definitely not complaining about that. That is absolutely how they should have handled something called Civil War. But that alone, I mean, not only, Tony, do you physically go head-to-head against Spider-Man because he's questioning you essentially. I mean, Tony sees it as betraying, but really he's questioning what's right, trying to step out and change his mind. You send your dogs after him on no leash, and had Punisher not been there, they would have killed Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
I thought it was an amusing scene where Cap's army is having a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and two villains show up who don't want to register, and they want to be with the heroes and help them out. And of course, Punisher whips out his guns and toasts them right there.
And he turns them right there.
And he turns around and says, "What?"
No. More than that, he goes, "What? They were bad guys." And that was, and then Cap pummels the shit out of him.
Yeah, Cap comes unglued.
Oh, yeah, he lost it.
Because of Frank Castle's respect for Captain America, he refuses to fight back.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I love about Punisher, is he has got a unilateral line. Bad mm-hmm. guys are bad guys. You kill bad guys. Good guys are good guys. It's not what you do. It's who you are in his book.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even though Cap was doing some things, he started down that line of possibly recruiting bad guys and making those bad decisions. And he had so much counsel against it, which I think is what helped that side be a little bit better. But Frank Castle was like, hell no, this is their bag. And he kills them. And the whole team, actually, he's only in the books for one book. It was two half books, back half of one and the front half of the other.
Yep.
And his story spinoff, Frontline is the news one. It's a Punisher War Journal. It was okay. And I'm a fan of the Punisher. I kind of enjoyed reading it, but it was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. It didn't add any more depth. It gave a little bit more perspective on, I guess for those who aren't familiar with him, it gave a little more perspective on why he does what he does.
Right.
But yeah, that whole when Cap goes, I mean, Punisher wouldn't even lift a finger to fight back. And they bring that out when Cap is just, his rage has run out and Punisher's on the guard. He's like, fight back. He's like, not you. You're Captain America. Why would I fight you ever?
Yeah.
I mean, he was going to let Cap kill him and be happy with that. Which him and Ben Grimm were the two greatest characters there. Because he's like, no, I still just do my job. I don't answer to the man. So that's why he's anti-registration, because he actually wasn't anti-registration. He was just helping people.
Right.
Right? Saving good guys, hurting bad guys. So that's it. And then Ben Grimm was, this is stupid. It's breaking up families. It's doing all this stuff. Ben left and went to France for a couple of weeks, which I thought was a very fun nod to the draft dodgers in Vietnam and those kind of things. Those two guys were really, really good because they both stayed absolutely 100% true to who they were, no matter what was going on around them. Mm-hmm. And that was cool. But going back to Goliath dying, they made a really good point about that. That brought in Wakanda at that point. That got the Black Panther involved.
Right.
Who was already kind of talking about becoming involved. But of course, they played that politics really well too. Wakanda doesn't want anybody telling them what to do, so they try to stay out of other people's politics. But at the same time, Oro is a former X-Men, and seeing her friends die, Black Panther, if I understand the timeline right, he's a former Avenger at this point. So he's seen his friends fight. And of course, they're both friends with Goliath. Even Tony was friends with Goliath, so to have his friend die was a tough thing. And that added a whole different aspect. And dude, he schooled Tony in a heartbeat, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Talk about that for a second.
Unfortunately, that's one of the ones I hadn't read in quite some time, and so I decided to skip it for this show.
Okay. Well, so I'll
let you recap that.
Sure. So as official representation of Wakanda, they get invited to the White House to have their say, their piece about the registration act, basically, as countries would do in real life, especially one that had been so closely tied to the U.S. and to the Avengers. And before they couldn't even enter the White House. They get flown in, right, on their own plane. They get met with an honor guard, welcome, honored, esteemed, you know, blah, blah, blah. Walk in the front door of the White House and security approaches Storm and says, only he can go see the president. You're an unregistered, stalking the Storm, you're an unregistered superpower in America, because she's still technically American, even though she's also, I guess it's joint citizenship. They don't really dive into it, but you got to theorize. She married him, if you haven't read before, which I didn't. She married him, so she's now Wakandan, but she's also American. So they insulted him and her immediately, saying you're essentially a threat to the president only because you're unregistered. So therefore, you're a criminal. And that shut everything. The talks down immediately. He starts to leave. There's some riots going on, some instigators in a crowd, because, of course, everybody's either protesting or supporting him being there. And him and his people jump in to save the humans because they see this thing about to pop off.
Right.
And they're stopping it. He's addressing the crowd. He's telling his people, harm no one. Make sure everybody stays safe. Let's neutralize the aggressors. And be done with it. And Iron Man gets his panties, his iron panties in a wad, and takes so much offense to it and tries to lecture him. And they're leaving. I mean, they calm the situation down. Him and Storm are on their plane leaving, and Iron Man is coming after him, just running his mouth constantly. Black Panther grabs this sword of something. I didn't quite catch the name of it, which is, you know, I know, a shocker for me. But it's this special sword that obviously had popped up in previous issues, and it can cut through anything. It's not a vibranium sword. It's a very special whatever. And he's only borrowing it for a while from something else. I don't remember the whole story. And he has this special battle armor. He jumps out of the helicopter with this sword and cuts Tony in half, except somehow, I guess it's maybe the properties of the sword, he only cuts Tony's armor off and doesn't harm him. And then
it's kind of like the neutron bomb of swords.
Yeah. He's like, I guess he's cutting at an atomic level or something. And then saves his life because then Tony was going to do something else. Something else happened. I think there was a plane crash or whatever. Basically, Tony was going to kind of go after and fight the Black Panther and not the Falcon, because the Falcon's with Captain America. Somebody else basically had to get in Tony's face. A Rhodey, War Machine. Had to get in his face at that moment, say, stop. He saved your life twice because he could have killed you in the air and he didn't. And he kept you from hitting the ground. And then there's something else that happened. He said, basically kept saving his life. This is not a war you want to start. You're already fighting a war in your own country. You don't want to. What are you? And even Rhodey at that point said, what are you doing? Yes. And that was where we really see the prelude to the end and the wheels coming off of this machine. But that was a very cool moment. And of course, then Black Panther ends up helping the resistance and giving them some technology and different things and helping them break into 42, which I thought was a very interesting name for the prison. And I love their story behind it. It was the 42nd idea that Reed Richards had written down of things that would happen. You know, the first 100 things that would happen in the Civil War.
100 things that he and Tony Stark came up to improve the how superheroes operate.
Yeah. So that was...
It all leads down to the inevitable big battle in issue 7 of Civil War. And shall we get into that part?
Well, check your notes real quick. Did we cover everything you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, me too, so... up until the very, very end. Oh, there's one other side story. It was, I think it was part of Frontlines. It was the what is the guy who actually, Robbie, who set off Nitro. It was, what's his hero name?
Robbie Baldwin, Speedball.
Speedball, right. So, okay, so this whole thing was Speedball being young, rushed in, set, essentially he gets blamed for setting off Nitro. He gets blamed for the 400 innocent deaths. He gets blamed for the
Yeah, because his teammates are all dead, so they can't take the blame.
Right. So basically, everybody died. Now, Nitro gets away because that's what he does, right? He explodes himself right. And later on reconstitutes. Wolverine tracks him down. Namor tracks him down. There's too much to go into with that, but there's a whole side arc that's interesting, but not quite relevant to the main arc of the story here. So all that's going on. But Robbie Baldwin, if you follow his story in prison, you see him really stick to his innocence and stick to, I only did my job. I didn't do anything wrong. And you see his humanity just get stripped down through this whole entire process of being incarcerated, of being assassinated at one point by a father of the kids, one of the kids who died. It's really, I think it added to the grittiness of the story, and it's necessary to read it along with everything else because it just gives you that third aspect of, hey, Cap and hey, Iron Man, you're forgetting what's actually going on here, and he's living what's going on here. He lost his powers, by the way, in the accident. So now he's a normal human being in prison for this horribly tragic event. And he has to carry that with him. And I'm going to talk about the wrap up of that in a second. But it does go south. And you should read that as part of it going through. But then we get to the final battle.
As every reader who's ever read comics can predict, there's going to be a final battle involving everyone coming together at the end.
Always.
And just, trying to kick the crap out of each other. There are surprising factions that show up to help one side or the other. Well, to help the anti-registration side. Nobody really came to help the pro-registration side.
No.
And so...
Well, they break into 42, right? Yeah. They have this huge plan. Punisher helps get them in by going into the Fantastic Four Towers, sealing the codes. Mm-hmm. Black Panther memorized a 64-digit code to unlock he's one of the only characters in this whole universe that I didn't even bat an eye when he said that. So right, that sounds right. About right. But they break into the prison and it's a trap. They knew they were coming. So they shut the main door. Well, Black Panther opens up a second door and they unlock everybody. So it's a huge battle. They start this battle. Cloak transports all of them out of the prison through the open portal and into Manhattan, downtown Manhattan.
Yeah, because S.H.I.E.L.D. is about to take control of 42 again.
Yes.
So they have to get everybody out of there. And of course, Cloak can't just pick and choose. When he spreads his cloak, he has to take everybody.
Yeah. And it was the largest thing. And of course, it takes him out of the battle because it was such a strain to do. But it was very interesting because there's no control to it. It's just panic. They said, do it now. And he goes, I don't know if I can. They said, who cares? Do it now. And he does it. And they rematerialize about a mile over the city. So they're like, oh, all the flyers grab somebody. Yeah. It was very well done. And of course, then they land downtown Manhattan. And tell us what happens.
So they fight and they try to get the civilians out of there. There's the police and other emergency responders who are trying to get everybody out of there. And it just escalates. People are getting hurt. Buildings are getting destroyed. And finally, Cap looks up and sees what's happening and says,
oh, well, actually, before he didn't just look up, he has Tony. He has him dead to rights. He's about to knock him the F out.
Yeah, he and the Vision were able to disable Tony's armor. And that's when Cap started wailing on Iron Man. And he's just really just kicking the crap out of him. And then that's when he starts, or I guess his ally starts saying, you need to ease up. And that's when he looks up and sees.
Well, Citizen's tackling. Citizens, what broke his heart. That's what changed everything.
Yeah, and it wasn't just citizens. It was first responders.
You see, yeah, and cops and firemen and regular Joes.
And they're trying to stop him from hurting Tony Stark anymore. And that's when he kind of comes to his senses and sees, oh my goodness.
Because he said, I'm fighting for you, or something along those lines. We're protecting you. And they're like, look around. No, you're not. And that's, he looks around and surveys the damage and just takes his mask off. I mean, that was the symbolism. He puts his shield down, takes his cowl off, and walks up to the cops and allows himself to be arrested and tells everybody to stand down.
Yeah, he says, you can't arrest Captain America, but you can arrest Steve Rogers.
Yes, because they still hold very awesomely true to that Captain America is an icon.
Yes.
Played by a man.
Yes.
And it's very, very good ending to the story and very heart-wrenching, you know, at the same time. It was very rough to watch that, or to read that, rather. But it was very impactful because Tony lost.
Yeah.
I mean, flat out lost. But mainly not just because Captain America had him dead to rights as far as the war went. It's because Captain America, with being ahead, finally realized he had come off the rails.
Right.
And I'm very curious to see how Chris Hemsworth might play that. Not Chris Hemsworth, that's Thor. Chris Evans. Thank you. Thank you. I want to see Chris Hemsworth play that as Captain America. See how Evans plays it, because Cap doesn't stay Cap through this whole thing. He loses sight of what's going on as well as Tony, and they become these darker, uglier versions of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have that moment, I mean, it's going to be a tearjerker if they do it right.
Yeah, it makes a very interesting character study amongst the primary heroes in this story.
Yeah. And just like that, book seven's over.
Yeah.
And that's it. If you just read the core of this, you don't get half of what we talked about, you know, half the stuff we shared, and you don't get the most epic thing that actually happens out of this, which is the death of Captain America.
Right.
Which is like, because sometimes, especially for time's sake, George and I will first start off on the core, and if we have time, we'll branch out. Like War of Kings, I couldn't even finish all those. There's just too many branches. But this one, we had time. But when we were discussing it, when we were discussing our recording schedule, we both went, but what, didn't Cap die in Civil War? But it's not here. And that's something, George, I don't understand why they did that, but didn't include it as an official part of the core of the arc.
Right. It was as if they intended to have that be a lead into a whole nother story arc, primarily within Cap's own magazine.
Maybe. And I know they bring him back. I read later. I mean, death is never permanent in Marvel.
Not anymore.
I don't know how Hawkeye died, because I need to go read some of the previous story arcs, but Hawkeye apparently died. But at the end, in the postscript, essentially, he comes back. He's not a part of the war, but in books related to the aftermath. The initiative, I think, I can't remember if he's in the initiative or the one actually called Aftermath, but in the stuff that's still kind of tied, that's not considered straight canon for the arc, he shows up and everyone's like, what? You're dead. It's like, yeah, but I'm not now. So what? But the whole death of Captain America being 100% related to this, but not being in it, threw me off. But if you do read, keep following through with the stories. It's, if you read through the app, it's number 80 through 99, somewhere in there. Around 78, 79, the whole main arc wraps up, and then you start seeing what happens after this ended. And Captain America's in prison, and he could easily get out, and he's not. And Tony actually comes to gloat, thinking he won, and Cap gives an amazing speech about how... Do you really think you won? How could you think, you know, it's still Tony not seeing. Okay. Age of Ultron, Avengers movie, Age of Ultron. He never said, I screwed up and I shouldn't do this. Not once.
Right.
He just got lucky that the vision worked out, because he's like, we got to try this. And it's like, do you never learn? And this is true to character in this book. He never learns. He thinks he's still right. He thinks he won. There's no concessions. And Cap's sitting there going, in prison, Cap's sitting there going, I may be behind bars, but we totally won. and this thing is going to go wrong. So Captain America was being paraded, which again is something that would happen, being paraded in public to his court date. And ultimately, I'm going to leave this for people to read because it really leads into this other story arc that if you get hooked by it, you're going to want to go find it. But he does end up getting killed much in the Oswald fashion, Harvey Lee Oswald fashion, where he's being paraded out. Somebody shoots him.
Yes.
And does it in such a way that even with his accelerated physique and his, I guess he has accelerated healing because, you know, he's not immortal. We know that, but he's a super soldier. So
yeah, his body essentially works at the peak that anybody's body could.
So it's not quite super healing. It's just kind of accelerated healing, those kind of things. Right. Yeah. Right. So even with all of the stuff that he has going for him, he dies. And they really, I don't know why Marvel really wanted to hammer that home, other than to think that they really wanted that us to fall into that. Oh, surprise, we brought him back. But they used Wolverine to prove that he's dead. Mm-hmm. And that was, and Daredevil, which was a very interesting side story. But he does die. And I don't, I, that's where the arc stops, because they end up burying him at sea with Namor, the real Cap, putting him back out in the Arctic. And then I don't know what happens from there, but that.
Yeah, that'll be a story for another time.
It will be indeed. Two battles I forgot to mention through this, and then we'll let you have the wrap up words to make sure that you get everything out that you want. Because I talk a lot, so I want to make sure you get everything out that you want. The epic battle between the final singular meeting between Tony and Rogers, because they took off the armor, they took off the masks. It was just Tony and Steve, not Captain America and Iron Man. They're in the I think it was the burned out ruins of the old Avengers mansion or something.
Yeah.
Because I don't even know what happened there. But they're talking, they see some pictures. They basically understood that neither one of them was going to change the other one's mind ever. Mm-hmm. And they decide in a very real way if it was a guy and a girl, they might have done something different. But in two guys, they decide to punch the crap out of each other for a few minutes with no armor, no special anything. And it is a very interesting tie through flashbacks of how Captain trained Iron Man because he wanted to be more than just a suit. And they fight it out for a few minutes and then get it. And it's just this, it's intensely well-written and well-drawn scene of bringing back the humanity to both of them, because throughout this whole thing, even I'm saying, you know, Tony is almost evil in my book, which I follow. I really, this is so well written. You follow what they want you to follow. Mm-hmm. That scene, though, show where this is post Frank Castle killing the bad guys. This is post pretty much everything but the big battle was coming next. And it reinserted that we understand we're making mistakes. We think we're making the right mistakes on either side. So it put the humanity back in. It reminded us, the reader, to get out of stereotypes and get out of the snowball that your mind goes in when you read the stories, and to put the humanity back into it to rebuild after the war. Because you have to be able to forgive Tony as a reader, or you're not going to want to read his stuff anymore. Or vice versa, you have to be able to forgive Cap and see how that's going to work. And then the other battle I thought was very, very cool was Spider-Man versus Captain America. Actually, wasn't even part of the main story. I think it was part of one of the Amazing Spider-Man side stories, where something was going on with Luke Cage and Captain America showed up and Spider-Man tried to arrest him. And you're inside Spider-Man's head. And so it's really cool to kind of see how he goes through with things and how he's always admired Captain America, and he's questioning himself for even fighting Captain America. And it's a great moment. And again, if you're only going to read the core, that's fine. But if you're going to read some of the spinoffs, read the Spider-Man story arc that goes with it, because it's really good.
I agree that one of the more significant side storylines is the Spider-Man set.
And I think the Baldwin storyline goes with it very well.
Yeah, Frontline was good too, because it led into several things. For instance, Namor's involvement in the Civil War, and the rise of Norman Osborn, which was subsequent to the series.
Another bad decision Tony made, but that's a story for another time. One last thing though, Penance made no sense to me whatsoever. There must be some other book that wasn't in there, I guess, it felt like.
Yeah, I agree completely. That was just out of left field. And and that's the character that Speedball became once toughened up and got out of prison.
Basically, he got his spirit broken. I mean, he became broken.
Yes.
And snapped. And basically, like a suicide person would, he said his goodbyes to his mother. He said goodbyes to some other people. The guy who shot him and almost killed him essentially brought his powers back. Something triggered when Reed was working on to save his life. And he got his powers back. And now they're only triggered through pain, apparently. So he had this weird, messed up Iron Maiden type suit that puts him in pain constantly. And he made a really dumb line about how he's always in pain because he's going to carry the 400 and something deaths with him. And I'm like, I kind of get where you're trying to go, but it feels like you wrote outside of everything you ever knew.
Yeah.
You needed maybe get advice from somebody who writes that kind of dialogue or those moments in their books and say, hey, help me out. And I'll give you a co-writing credit or something. Cause it went sideways. And then there was a wrap up storyline where you see him in action. They're chasing down or arresting somebody. And it's their version. I forget what they're called, but basically it's Suicide Squad for Marvel.
The Thunderbolts.
Thank you. Yep. Penance is not a character I'd ever like to see in the game.
Yeah, I agree. It didn't do much for me either.
All right. So what else? What other thoughts do you have on this series before we wrap it out?
Well, I think we can wrap it up by saying, like I said in the previous show, this is my favorite series since about 1995. I thought Marvel did a great job with it. It was really thought-provoking, and the production values were just excellent. So I give it an A on my grading scale.
Yeah, I don't think I can claim enough of knowledge and reading to give it an educated ranking. But for my own personal opinion, I'm right there with George. This is one of the best stories I've personally read. And I cut my teeth on Infinity War. That's what I cut my teeth on in comics. That's what I was introduced to the whole world of comics was Infinity War. So this beat that in my book. It was really, really... So speaking of the 90s, we're going to tackle a very short story next. Thor, God of Thunder and the God Butcher story arc from 2012. And then we're going to be working on the Executioner song, which was the first as a very special place in my heart. I hope it reads as well as I can remember it, because the reason it has a special place in my heart is the first story arc that I bought every issue that was associated with it. Period, both in a readable copy and a collector's edition. And I have them all sealed in a box in a storage room over here. Still not worth crap, but you know, it was the hopes of a young teenager to become rich and also read a good story at the same time. So we're going to be tackling that. So that's that. If you've got, hey, we have our own email now. I forgot about this. PXP, which is panel by panel, PXP@giantsizeteamup.com. You can email us directly if you have a story arc you'd like us to read. If you have feedback, I'd like to do an episode, George, and I'm sure you're going to agree with me, but I'd love to do an episode like they do in the back of the magazines where there's the mailbag and you just read the stuff. And it doesn't have to be directly related to what we just talked about. It's just a mailbag episode. Like, hey, you talked about Dark Phoenix, or hey, you talked about Civil War, and here's your thoughts. And we'd love to respond back to those.
Oh, yeah, I would love to do a letters page type thing. That would be fun.
That would be so much fun. So you can email us, pxp@giantsizeteamup.com, and we'd love to get your emails there. Until then, we are a part of the Giant Size Team Up Network. We have tons of awesome friends and alliances. DC on Screen is an amazing show. We've got Marvel Cinematic Universe, From the Helicarrier, Breaking the Panel. I'm sure I'm missing some others that either coming or have come at this point. So lots of great stuff. And at this recording, the site is still being worked on. But by the time you hear it, hopefully you can go to giantsizeteamup.com and see everything that we have to offer there. Till next time, I'm Charles McFall. That's George Duro. We're going to get back to reading.
And don't forget to ask yourself, whose side are you on?